Accession number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about the voyage on the Empire Orwell out to Singapore in February 1952. Now, we'd got as far as Ceylon, we think.
Yeah.
And what do you remember next of that voyage? Anything that happened?
Well, after that, we travelled for another, I suppose it was 4 or 5 days, and arrived in Singapore, where we all disembarked. There was a Suffolk draft on board. I can't remember how many, about 20 odd chaps, I suppose. And we had a day in Singapore, and of course, this to me was very exciting.
And what were your first impressions of Singapore? You know, coming in, because it's very different from anywhere else you've been in your life.
Well, it's very, very hot. It appeared to be very hot and humid. And although by this time we were all in our sort of jungle green kit. And I was lucky. I actually had a cousin who was soldering in the headquarters in Singapore. And they met me off the boat and took me to the officers' club, where there was a very nice swimming pool, and I had a very nice lunch, and spent the day with them, and then went back to the railway station to get on the train that was to take us up to Kuala Lumpur. I collected my 20 odd draft of 20, and I think a draft of the Royal West Kents, which I was put in charge of. We were all armed, and this, I suppose, was the first time that they, and certainly me, had actually been given weapons that you know, we might have to use. And we were warned that there were one or two places on the line between Singapore and KL that trains had been shot up in the not too recent past. So it was a night trip. I can't quite remember how long it took us to get there, but I think it was something like 8 hours, 5 to 8 hours anyhow. And when one went through the normal, I think I was OC train, and we went through all the normal thing of having sentries posted. We were all ready to. We were a bit all. I think we were probably all a bit jumpy. We'd never sort of been in a situation like this before, and it was rather like, being put into the deep end very, very quickly. One minute we'd been on the boat and everything was lovely and the rest of it, and the next minute here we were in what we consider to be a sort of warlike situation. So I think everybody was nervous, and of course we didn't know the country. We knew there was jungle, but we didn't really know what it was, and so I think everybody was a bit jumpy. However, we early next morning we arrived in Kuala Lumpur. There had not been anything that had upset us on the way. And
what was the actual train like? I mean, was it
the train? As far as I remember, was I think we had first of all we had an engine either pushing or pulling a wagon with a load of concrete or whatever it was in front of it, so that should the line have been mined, it was hoped that this wagon would go up first, and then it was followed by the train. I can't remember whether it was a normal train that had civilians on board as well or not. This train used to go then from KL. It used to then go on up to Penang, and certainly later on in my tour in Malaya, I had to take the train up once as OC train, and I suspect it was the same train that had started off in Singapore and eventually arrived in Penang. So I suppose we had one or two coaches that were for military use, and the rest of it was a normal civilian train, as far as I can remember.
And when you got to Kuala Lumpur, is this still February, or have we drifted into March now? Roughly.
I think it was the end of February, probably. Something like that.
And what happened when you got there to Kuala Lumpur?
Well, we were met and taken back to battalion headquarters, which were based in Waterburn Camp in Kuala Lumpur. And of course, in those days, Kuala Lumpur was, compared today, was a tiny little town, really. I haven't been back, but I'm told that for example, the military cemetery is now virtually in the middle of KL, whereas in our day, it was right out on the outskirts, and which just sort of shows how much KL must have grown. And I know from seeing pictures of it that it clearly is. And then we had company outstations in all the outlying areas.
This is where your battalion, the 1st Battalion Suffolk Regiment, were at
Waterburn. Waterburn.
How do you spell Waterburn? Or
Wardy. I think Wardiebun. I think it was something like that.
And that was where the headquarters of the...
That was where the town headquarters was and headquarter company. And then the four rifle companies were based in different locations within a 30-mile radius of KL, and they all operated out of their own areas separately.
Now, what happened when you reported to the headquarters?
I was welcomed by the commanding officer, after that, then I had to do some jungle training, because you weren't obviously allowed to take command of a platoon without being given some instruction in jungle training.
And what were you what was the interview with the colonel like? Who was the colonel?
The colonel was a chap called Philip Morecambe, who was an Australian. Very, very nice man, and doing, as I found later, a very good job as a CO. In fact, he was given the DSO for his command of the battalion.
Now, how did he receive you? There's him, a colonel. The most junior of subalterns in his battalion. How did he actually greet you? What was the interview like?
Well, I suppose it was rather like a visit to the headmaster at school, really. He said he was pleased. I think he was pleased to get another officer, probably anyhow, because we were a little bit short of officers. He just gave me the normal welcome and passed me on to the adjutant, who would brief me on, what was what my future was. I hadn't been in KL very long before the whole battalion moved up to a place called Kuala Kubu Baru. Kuala Kubu, C-U-B-U, I think it was. Baru, B-A-H-R-E-U or E-A. And that was the...
Hang on. While you were at Kuala Lumpur, I know you weren't there long, but did you start your jungle training with the headquarter company there?
I think I probably did, yes. I can't remember much about the jungle training that I did, but I must have done. I think the jungle training course was 2 or 3 weeks, and one would have just been put in as if one was another rank. I think one did the same course for other ranks and as to whether you're an officer or not. Now, what
was there to learn about jungle training? And what, I mean, I don't want to go into what a patrol was like, because we'll do that, you know. But what was it you had to learn that you didn't already know?
Well, I think we had... one has no idea of what the jungle is like, and life, you know, in the jungle. So I suppose the sort of first initiation is being taken into the jungle for the very first time, and there's there are so many different types of jungle, especially all around KL. There was a sort of more mountainous terrain where one got up onto the ridges and made use and walked along the ridges and made use of the contours, etc. And then there was the swamps, which you'll come on to in due course, which is where I spent most of my time in Malawi, which was totally different. That was all flat, very flat, very wet, very everything. But the first thing was just this sort of the initial thing of what it's like in the jungle.
And what was it like? I mean,
well, it's...
Or is that easier to describe as we actually get into it?
Could be. Well, I mean, what was it like? I think we started off in the more what I call sort of mountainous part, or deep hills, very large ravines, normally with a river running down. And that actually was one of the reasons why normally you could never actually really get lost in the jungle, because as long as you hit a river and followed it down, it will eventually bring you to a kampong or something on that, although you may not be in the place that you meant to be, but difficult to get lost. And then, of course, the jungle in the day and the jungle at night, quite different. In the day, you tended not to hear so much the animal noise, because if you were patrolling through the jungle, they heard you coming long before you got to them, and things tended to slip away. But once it got nightfall, then the noise of the monkeys and the birds and everything was very noticeable indeed. And then when one got to the swamp side of life, well, I suppose the other thing I should say is that I seem to remember that almost every day it got dark about 5 o'clock. And a half an hour or an hour before nightfall, it would normally rain. And you would almost guarantee it was going to rain. So if the rain didn't come too early, then you tried to batter up before the rain came, obviously, before you got absolutely soaked through to the skin. That was a sort of initial thing as just what life, you know, what our life was going to be like.
Now, what was the mess like at the headquarters? I mean, that was your first introduction to the 1st Battalion.
That was just a normal officer's mess. Kept running with a full staff and everything, because we, having got out to our outstations, then every now and then we'd have 24 or 48 hours rest and come into KL.
That's moving ahead slightly.
Yeah.
So what's the next stage? And you arrive, you're doing your jungle training, but not for long when you move to...
Then we moved to Kuala Kubu Baru, because the Royal West Kents who were in charge of that area, and it was an area north of Kuala Lumpur, were due for retraining, because every battalion every now and then was sort of pulled out of the line and went back for retraining, and we went up The battalion went up to Kuala Kubaburu there, and I continued to do my jungle training from there. And that was certainly mountainous part of the country. I remember. After
now the whole battalion had gone there.
I think the whole battalion must have been there. We certainly had our mess and everything there, and I was there. Whether companies came up at. Because I think we took over the KKB area from the West Kents, which I suspect was actually a good thing, because the Suffolks must have been there for. They went out in 49, I think. So they've been there 2.5, 3 years. And so it was probably actually very good for them to get into a new area. So I suspect it was actually looked on as quite a good thing. And it was from there that I was then finished my jungle training and was sent to A Company, which was based at a small village not very far from Port Swetnam, called Sungi Mangis, Sungei Mangis.
And that's near Port Swetnam.
And that was near Port Swetnam, yep.
And that would be when? That would be into March, I presume.
That would be in, well, yes, that would be, well, I can't quite remember how long jungle training I did, whether it was three, 4 weeks, that sort of period of time. And I, Sungi Mangis was just a line of Chinese shops, which the military had taken over, and we lived above these shops.
Now tell me what the billets, let's start with that. Yeah. What were the billets like, the officers' billets?
We just had, I think we had a room each. I don't think we shared rooms, we might have done. But they were just a room in above a whole lot of sort of Chinese shops. I suppose, I mean, it was a tiny little place. And I suppose, basically speaking, we took over Sungi Mangis, I suppose, there. And to start with, I didn't take over a platoon straight away. I was put under another platoon commander, who certainly took me out on several patrols before I was allowed to have a go on my own.
Now, who was your major commanding?
He's a chap. Look, our company commander was Major Tim O'Reilly.
And what was he like? He'd be your first real company commander?
He was a very nice, kind, family man. I think company commanders had quite a difficult time in Malaya, because it was very much a platoon commander's war. You were given a task of patrolling a set piece of jungle, briefed by obviously the company commander, and then told, I want you to go. And we normally went for out on roughly 5-day operations. But once we'd left him and got into the jungle, it was entirely up to the platoon commander or the platoon sergeant, because we operated in half platoon groups. So there'd be 12 men to a patrol, something like that. And it was entirely up to that commander as to whether he entered the jungle and sat there and said he was doing this, that, and the other, or whether he went and did a proper patrol.
Now, who were you attached to? Do you remember the name of the lieutenant?
He was a lieutenant called Pat Hopper. Pat Hopper, H-O-P-P-E-R. Still with us.
What What were your impressions of what were your impressions of Pat Hopper? Firstly, he was your.
He was a senior subaltern, obviously, to me. And again, you know, everything was very new, and whatever he said, you know, was gospel as far as I was concerned. And he took me out on. It must have been two or three patrols or before I was let wild. And in fact, it was on one of those patrols. We were acting on information, and we had finished at two or three.
Now, hang on, take us through the typical patrol first, and then we'll come to the action. Right. So you go out on patrol. Now, you said you divided into two, about 12.
Yes, we operated in half platoons, and in my case, actually, when I came to get a platoon, I didn't have a platoon sergeant. I had a senior corporal, and we operated. He would take one half the platoon, and I would take the other.
Now, where would you go?
Sangamangus was in the swamp area, and if you sort of took a map, we tried to obviously work on information, because I mean the jungle is a big place, and without any information, life would have been very difficult.
Now, what were the sources of the information?
The sources of the information. Were majority-wise the civilian population. They were terrified of the communist terrorists, CTs. And of course, the CTs were very reliant on them for food, because other than the ones that were operating very deep in the jungle, they hadn't got any facility for food, so they had to come out for food, and the Malaya was a very very mixed population: Chinese, Tamils, and Malays, and of course the Malays being the only ones who were originally there. So most information came from that. Quite a lot of information, of course, came from captured CTs. And they often used to. I mean, we used sort of tactics that I'm afraid probably today would be looked on with total horror. But it was endeavour to frighten people into telling us a bit more.
I'll come back to that when we captured someone, if you see what I mean. So you get this intelligence from either civilians or from interviews, interrogations.
Yes.
What would it say? I mean, how would it guide you? I mean, or would it just say?
The terrorists operated from camps in the jungle. They'd all originally, of course, been trained by us during the Second World War. So the good ones were actually quite good at it. But they had been trained by us, and then after the war had turned against us, and they wanted to take over the country. So they lived in these camps, and of course, if you could find a camp, then you were quids in.
So the civilian source would perhaps provide you with a clue or an actual location.
If you knew that they were coming to certain villages for food, then of course you could ambush the tracks from the jungle to the villages, And then, if you were very lucky, you could, if you captured a good CT and he talked, they would tell you roughly where the camps were. I mean, they probably wouldn't be able to pinpoint them, but they could give you a pretty good idea, you know, what area to go and search. And a lot of our patrolling in the jungle was, of course, purely done with drawing lines on a map and keeping on a compass bearing and crisscrossing grid squares. You hoped that you would suddenly come across a track, which would lead you to one of their camps.
Now, how did you liaise with the other half platoon? Because what concerns me there is the idea that you might bump into each other. If you're going to the same place, weren't the risks of bumping?
I don't think that arose. I mean, I'm sure it did happen with one patrol straying into another patrol's area, but we had our very distinct grid squares that we were to be in from day one to day five or whatever it was.
So one half platoon would be in square A and something would be in square B.
Yes. And you just hoped that you didn't stray into another patrol's area. It wasn't difficult keeping on a straight line until you came to an obstacle such as a wide river or something like that. But what was quite difficult was deciding how far you'd actually been, and a lot of that depended on, you know, what sort of swamp were you walking through. I mean, some of it was, I mean, what some of these, the poor radio operator and the chap carrying the Bren gun, they really did work hard for that.
So how would you navigate? I mean, was it all by compass bearing?
It was nearly all by compass bearing, yes, because in our, when we were in the KKB area and that sort of thing, you could keep tag of where you were because the maps were quite good from the sort of contours and all the rest of it. You had a fairly good idea where you were, but in the swamp, there was just nothing but
swamp's a different area from KKB.
Yeah, totally.
Okay,
yes,
we'll come back to that later. Yeah.
We were Sangay Mangas. We were in the swamp. And that was just totally flat, underwater nearly all the time. And we sloshed through it all day, cutting the bamboo.
What was the swamp like? Because people just can't imagine. I mean, we see films of it, but what was it like? I mean,
it was horrible. I suppose it is the answer to that. You were wet.
How deep?
All deep. Probably not more than up most of the time, up to your calves, probably, something like that.
And was it water or mud? Was it mixed?
It was a mixture of mud, mango plants and things, etc. And when it came to bashing up at night, often the only dry piece you could get hold of would be the roots of a tree that were growing out of the swamp.
Now, were there a lot of trees? I'll come back to bashing. Were there a lot of trees? How close together?
Oh, no, a lot of trees. Yes. It was jungle in the water is probably the best, you know, thing about it. And
no gaps between trees. There was complete overhead cover.
There was overhead cover. Yes.